Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. President Obama speaks to UN Climate Summit. U.S. President Barack Obama urged world leaders to rise to this moment Monday, telling them their progress at a UN Climate Summit in Paris will be measured by the suffering that is averted and a planet that is preserved. He called on the delegations to agree to a system that is transparent and gives them confidence everyone else is meeting their commitments.
Here in Paris, let's secure an agreement that builds in ambition, where progress paves the way for regularly updated targets. Targets that are not set for each of us, but by each of us, taking into account the differences that each nation is facing.
Now, those nations include countries on the continent of Africa. And what about them? Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg for VOA.
For months, African negotiators have repeated a sort of mantra as they prepared for climate change talks in Paris. Worldwide 2-degree temperature rise limit, binding agreement, financial help from developed nations. Mongani Majola, a spokesman for President Jacob Zuma, explained from Paris.
We're expecting that there will be some conclusion of the negotiations that started in Durban in 2011 towards a negotiated legally binding agreement will be bound by an agreement.
But the negotiators gather in Paris this week. The most important thing, a solution, is very much up in the air. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The leaders at the summit are working to agree on binding measures to keep global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius. This is VOA News. Pope Francis is on his way back home now, back to the Vatican, ending his first African trip, which took him to 3 countries. He flew out of the Central African Republic early Monday afternoon, following celebrating Mass before a huge gathering at the National Stadium in the capital. VOA's Chris Stein was there in Banqui and has this report.
Pope Francis brought his message of peace and reconciliation to a mosque in Bangui's PK5 neighborhood. It was perhaps the most treacherous part of his 24-hour stay in the CAR's capital. PK5 was once home to tens of thousands of Muslims, but the area has been the scene of multiple clashes between Muslim and Christian militias, and the majority of its residents have fled to other cities or to IDP camps. Despite security concerns, Pope Francis arrived at the mosque in his open-sided Pope Mobile, flanked by guards and United Nations peacekeepers.
Vorrei assicurare loro la mia gratitudine e la mia stima.
Addressing an audience inside, he called for solidarity between Muslims and Christians. Chris Stein for VOA News, Bangui.
The Pope had said his visit to the country would be incomplete without meeting with the Muslim community. Well, tomorrow is World AIDS Day, and certain groups at high risk for HIV and AIDS in Kenya remain marginalized when it comes to accessing testing and treatment. Well, Lenny Ruvaga reports for VOA from Nairobi on the challenges they face.
22-year-old Bernard Adede was born HIV positive. His parents both died shortly after. Adede says it hasn't always been easy to get treatment at Kenya's public hospitals. He has missed treatments because he didn't want to deal with the stigma.
These hospitals where they're so harsh, like public hospitals, they're so harsh for adolescents. When you go to take medication, the way they treat you, you feel like you are not comfortable to be there. So you abscond or going to take medication and you better stay at home.
AIDS is the leading cause of death among adolescents in Kenya and throughout Africa. Kenya's Ministry of Health says about 10,000 HIV-positive teenagers die each year there due to delayed treatment. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
The National AIDS Control Council says there are approximately 1.6 million people confirmed to be living with HIV/AIDS in Kenya. Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu said Monday his country will not apologize for shooting down a Russian fighter jet last week along the Turkey-Syria border. He told reporters after a meeting with NATO that Turkish forces did their duty to protect his country's airspace. And Israel has suspended diplomatic contacts with the European Union related to the troubled Israeli-Palestinian peace process to protest an EU move to label products manufactured in Israeli settlements in the West Bank and other Israeli-occupied territory. Joe Palca in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Pope Francis wrapped up his visit to the Central African Republic on Monday with a visit to a mosque in a particularly tense part of the capital.
That's VOA's Chris Stein reporting from Bangui. Details coming up. Also in the news, Ugandan rebels killed at least a dozen people in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province. And Africa's top climate change negotiators say they are confident they will get a legally binding agreement at this year's Paris climate change talks. We'll have these stories plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Mali and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Pope Francis wrapped up his visit to the Central African Republic today with a visit to a mosque in a particularly tense part of the capital. VOA's Chris Stein was there in Bangui and has this report.
Pope Francis brought his message of peace and reconciliation to a mosque in Bangui's PK5 neighborhood. It was perhaps the most treacherous part of his 24-hour stay in the CAR's capital. PK5 was once home to tens of thousands of Muslims. But the area has been the scene of multiple clashes between Muslim and Christian militias, and the majority of its residents have fled to other cities or to IDP camps. Despite security concerns, Pope Francis arrived at the mosque in his open-sided Popemobile, flanked by guards and United Nations peacekeepers.
Vorrei assicurare loro la mia gratitudine e la mia stima.
Addressing an audience inside, he called for solidarity between Muslims and Christians. Ali Aishatu is one of the hundreds of people who live in tents on the grounds of the mosque. She fled there during the peak of the intercommunal violence in early 2014. She says if the Pope goes back and peace doesn't come, she expects the government to continue the work because she says they're trapped in their neighborhood. And if there's still no peace, she says she'll just have to turn to God. Later that day, Francis celebrated Mass in Bangui's stadium before departing for the Vatican. The question now is whether his visit helped to ease tensions. The conflict in the CAR, dating back to early 2013, has killed thousands of people and at its peak displaced over a million. Nancelle Delourdes is a Christian who attended the Pope's stadium Mass. She says she's ready for Muslims and Christians to live alongside each other once again.
Oui, ça sera un peu difficile, mais nous...
It'll be hard, she says, but we are all God's creations, and we're ready for reconciliation. The next test of peace in the CAR will come December 13th, when the country holds a constitutional referendum ahead of a presidential election planned for 2 weeks later. Chris Stein for VOA News, Bangui.
Ugandan rebels killed at least a dozen people in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province yesterday in a night-long attack. One of the dead was a UN peacekeeper. The French news agency says a regional official reported the 12 deaths. However, a local human rights organization says the death toll is actually 30. The number includes 7 civilians, 8 Congolese soldiers, a peacekeeper from Malawi, and 14 rebels. General Jean Belaud of the UN Stabilization Mission in the Congo confirms the death of the peacekeeper, and he says the attackers were members of the rebel Allied Defense Forces from Uganda. The mostly Islamist ADF tried to overthrow Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni and fled to Congo. They have been accused of serious human rights violations. Also in Kivu province, 20 are reported missing after a government-operated speedboat capsized this morning on Lake Kivu. Reuters reports more than 40 passengers were aboard the vessel. No cause for the accident was given. One Kenyan is in critical condition and two others were injured when students jumped from the windows of a Nairobi university where police were conducting a mock drill. A Red Cross official says the students thought a terrorist attack was underway. The French news service says the students panicked when they heard police firing their weapons at Strathmore University. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has launched several attacks in Kenya in recent years. More than 140 students were killed during an attack on Garissa University 6 months ago. The world's two biggest greenhouse gas emitters, the United States and China, pledged to work together to fight global warming as a key climate summit got underway near Paris. As Lisa Bryant reports for VOA, more than 150 nations are kicking off nearly 2 weeks of talks amid tight security.
In speeches Monday, leaders of the world's richest and poorest nations laid out the importance of reaching an ambitious climate deal in Paris and the consequences of failure. U.S. President Barack Obama talked about seeing the effects of climate change during a recent visit to Alaska.
It was a preview of one possible future, a glimpse of our children's fate if the climate keeps changing faster than our efforts to address it. Submerged countries, abandoned cities, fields that no longer grow, political disruptions that trigger new conflict, and even more floods of desperate peoples seeking the sanctuary of nations not their own.
Obama spoke just before his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. During talks earlier in the day, the two agreed to collaborate to ensure a low-carbon global economy. More than 180 nations have submitted climate action plans ahead of the talks at Le Bourget near Paris. Their pledges, however, fall short of limiting emissions enough to hold global warming to 2 degrees over pre-industrial levels by century's end. Beyond that, scientists warn, the planet will enter uncharted and potentially catastrophic territory. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged nations to show compromise and flexibility to reach a bold climate deal.
The time for brinksmanship is over. Let us build a durable climate regime with a clear rule of the road that all countries can agree to follow. Paris must mark a decisive turning point.
Sticking points remain, including crucial financing and transferring clean technology to help poorer nations adapt to climate change. Thousands of police and military are out in force to assure security. On Sunday, police arrested dozens of protesters in Paris who violated France's current state of emergency to join worldwide demonstrations for climate action. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Africa's top climate change negotiators say they are confident they will get a legally binding agreement at this year's Paris climate change talks. But scientists say the temperature cap they seek is an estimate at best. Even senior negotiators from South Africa say they have not pinned down exactly how much money they want from donors to help the developing countries adopt climate-friendly strategies. The talks begin today. From sunny, hot Johannesburg, VOA. Anita Powell reports on the storm clouds gathering over the Paris climate talks.
For months, African negotiators have repeated a sort of mantra as they prepared for climate change talks in Paris. Worldwide 2-degree temperature rise limit, binding agreement, financial help from developed nations. But as talks begin Monday in the cloudy French capital, negotiators from South Africa, the nation that has taken the lead for Africa in the talks, say while they are confident of success, they are still not entirely sure what it will look like. South Africa hosted the 2011 climate talks, which some experts say marked a turning point in the conversation by allowing poorer nations, like African nations, to have more of a say. Mongani Majola, a spokesman for President Jacob Zuma, explained from Paris.
We're expecting that there will be some conclusion of the negotiations that started in Durban in 2011 towards a negotiated legally binding agreement, by which we mean that all countries, big and small, will be bound by an agreement under the auspices of the United Nations that will limit their green emissions, green gas emissions, and work towards a sustainable environment, but that they will also contribute to this sustainable environment with their technologies and finances.
One of the negotiators' demands is a cap on the average global temperature increase of more than 2 degrees Celsius, a threshold that scientists have identified as kind of a point of no return on climate change. But as scientist Agathe Maupin, a researcher at the Johannesburg-based South African Institute of International Affairs, explains, the science behind that is complicated. The 2-degree benchmark is merely an estimate that could vary widely by location. She says that's one of the reasons it's often difficult to give specifics when it comes to these climate change talks. The science is complex, and so is the politics that drives major global decisions. And she says reconciling the two is a monumental task.
It's very difficult as a scientist to kind of translate your scientific knowledge into something that can be used at the political level. It's actually a very difficult exercise, and especially around climate.
Majola says it's similarly difficult to nail down what seem to be vital and specific figures, like how much African nations want developed countries to contribute.
It's very difficult to estimate precisely how much money and from whom it's going to come, but we are hoping that the countries will contribute according to their size.
Majola says President Zuma is confident going into the talks, but perhaps his own very complicated role in the talks illustrates the complex challenge that lies ahead. Zuma will be representing his nation, which is Africa's biggest polluter, and has the second biggest economy, and has said he intends to play a major role with the team of African negotiators, who represent less developed, poorer nations. But he also chairs the group of 77 plus China, and the latter is the world's largest polluter and a vital South African trade partner. And he plays a key role in the economic bloc known as BRICS, for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. His government has said that climate change is undeniably taking a toll on Africa and is hurting agriculture, livelihoods, and food security. But as negotiators gather in Paris this week, the most important thing, a solution, is very much up in the air. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Beijing and other parts of China experienced some of the worst smog of the year today. The high pollution levels occurred as China's president prepared to meet with other world leaders in Paris about climate change. The air quality in the Chinese capital was considered hazardous. Residents were told to stay indoors if possible. Some industrial plants were closed while certain types of vehicles were banned from the roads. The concentration of airborne particles that can damage the lungs reached 20 times World Health Organization limit for daily exposure. Visibility in Beijing was very poor, with the tops of tall buildings barely visible. You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Pope Francis wrapped up his visit to the Central African Republic today with a visit to a mosque. Ugandan rebels killed at least dozens of people in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province. And Africa's top climate change negotiators say they are confident they'll get a legally binding agreement at this year's Paris climate change talks. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. Reuters reports Burkina Faso officials are expected to announce today provisional results from yesterday's presidential election. The election will bring the first new leader to the country in decades after longtime President Blaise Compaoré was ousted in October of last year. Sunday's vote was reported peaceful. European Union leaders met with Turkey's prime minister over the weekend and signed an agreement regarding Middle Eastern migrant and refugee flows to Europe and Turkey's long-sought membership in the EU. The EU needs Turkish help to contain the flow. Officials say about 1.5 million migrants and asylum seekers have entered Europe. It is not clear what the agreement for EU membership entails. Being chronically ill with a disease like diabetes, asthma, or heart disease is a challenge for everyone, but not understanding one's disease and failing to cope emotionally with its effects can make that struggle harder. Many clinics and hospitals often cannot address these issues. In this report, VOA's Adam Phillips tells us about City Health Works, a community-based health coaching organization in New York, inspired by a South African nonprofit organization.
Mamie Kaur, founder and director of City Health Works, takes a seat in the group's sunlit offices in the Harlem neighborhood. She glances up at a training schedule for new health coaches that serve the chronically ill in this low-income New York community. 95% of the group's clients are African American or Hispanic and live below the poverty line. Many are immigrants, elderly, or alone. It's a complex population with many challenges. Kaur says that's why, in addition to community roots and a high school education, all trainees must be naturally empathetic and careful listeners.
And then they leverage their sense of shared life experience and meet with people in their neighborhood one-on-one to provide motivational health coaching to help them reach goals that will help them better manage their chronic illnesses like diabetes, hypertension, asthma, that affect every day of your life.
This personal approach differs from what the poor and uninsured usually experience in public clinics and emergency rooms. Doctors rarely have the time to delve into a patient's background and give detailed explanations, and patients may not feel comfortable asking questions about their health or sharing personal information. But when patients meet with City Health Works coaches, it's usually at home or in a familiar community setting where it feels okay to ask questions, to vent, and to just feel heard.
And then our teams of coaches are connected to clinics across the neighborhood so that we can serve as eyes and ears for the doctors and nurses in the clinic and alert them when there's a problem going on.
For example, diabetes sufferers might know that they must monitor their blood sugar levels and inject themselves with the insulin they've been prescribed. However, some may not do so, simply because they don't want to admit to the doctor they're afraid of needles. City Health Works opens up channels of communication. This strategy is rooted in Kaur's life-changing experience nearly a decade ago with Mamelani Projects, a community health and youth development organization in South Africa's Western Cape Province. Kaur happened to meet Mamelani's founder, Carly Tanner, on a hike. She was impressed by Tanner's skill at bringing community members together to address their health and development concerns. Kaur soon went to work at Mamelani, where she helped HIV-positive clients create their own health food businesses. Meanwhile, she adopted Mamelani's distinctly African philosophy. Speaking to the VOA from Cape Town, Carly Tanner said that American culture tends to value the individual above all, while the African tendency is to put the family and community first.
People often find their strength in relation to each other. And so one of the things that I notice in the groups is how much strength people draw from being able to share their experience and hear other people's experiences and be able to support each other. So this is one of the things that I think might be different in an African context than in a Western context.
In South Africa, the rate of HIV/AIDS infection is extremely high, but acknowledging one's positive HIV status to family members or other intimates can be taboo. Stigma can keep a person from seeking information and support. But Tanner says these concerns often melt away in the peer group meetings Mamalani facilitates.
I've been in workshops where it's a group of community members who don't know each other that well. And through the way the facilitator holds the sessions, by the third or fourth session, people have disclosed whether they're HIV positive or not. They've spoken about either their own status or their partner's status or their child's status.
Both Mamalani and City Health Works offer educational workshops in areas such as stress reduction and nutrition. But cultural sensitivity and respect are also essential. For example, too much red meat can contribute to hypertension, heart disease, and other problems. But meat is a key element in many African ceremonies and festive celebrations. So Mamalani staff honor that practice while also encouraging smaller portions. Similarly, in New York, City Health Work staff encourage their Hispanic clients to have 2 cups of yucca and rice, not 3, at their feasts. Again, Carly Tanner.
And then we also talk about just taking baby steps around changing food in the home. So not really changing everything that you're eating, but maybe have 1 night a week where you change what you're eating and try and negotiate with the family around the importance of why you're making those changes. So to make changes slowly.
Kaur says that means understanding many lifestyle factors that affect their health, even indirectly.
How do you help someone in their health when they don't have a job? How do you help someone in their health when they're in an abusive relationship?
Manmeet Kaur saw numerous examples at Mamalani where a breakthrough in one area of life created a ripple effect that improved a client's health overall. This holistic approach seems to be working at City Health Works. 8 out of 10 clients report improved test results, and 90% say they'd recommend the program to others. Indeed, City Health Works hopes to expand its services beyond Harlem and Manhattan to Greater New York next year. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Jury selection begins today in the trial of the first of 6 Baltimore officers facing charges in the death of Freddie Gray, a black man injured in police custody. The incident in the eastern U.S. state of Maryland sparked weeks of protests earlier this year. William Porter is accused of manslaughter, reckless endangerment, and misconduct. He's one of the officers who dealt with Freddie Gray after his arrest April 12th. The 25-year-old Gray suffered severe spinal injury as he was transported in a police van. He died a week later in a Baltimore hospital. Allegations of racial discrimination and systemic police misconduct triggered weeks of demonstrations in Baltimore and around the country. The 6 police officers facing charges will be tried separately. Porter and 2 of the other officers are black. The other 3 are white. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, after nearly 2 years of fighting the Ebola pandemic, Sierra Leone announced last month that the nation was Ebola-free. Guinean officials have declared that they will also soon be free of the virus. Join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Chaka Sali and his guests discuss the battle to completely end Ebola in West Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
The battle against Ebola does not end when a patient survives the virus. I am Dr. Conde Greaves. Many survivors return home to their villages only to face stigma based on fear and ignorance. We must fight against stigma and welcome Ebola survivors back into our communities. They are no longer contagious and pose no threat to you. Thousands of orphan children also need your support. Imagine losing your mother and father to Ebola. Their tragedy is often compounded by rejection and isolation when they return home. This is wrong. They are not sick. We must welcome orphan children back into our communities. They have suffered enough. We must also respect our healthcare workers. Many have given their own lives so that others may have a fighting chance. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
This is African News Tonight on The Voice of America, and here is a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Pope Francis wrapped up his visit to the Central African Republic today with a visit to a mosque. Ugandan rebels killed at least a dozen people in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu province yesterday. And Africa's top climate change negotiators say they are confident they will get a legally binding agreement at this year's Paris climate change talks. Coming up, music from South Africa. And in our feature segment, preterm births, the world's number one killer of babies. I'm Yehi Suhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Hello, Sunny.
Happy Monday, Yehias.
Sunny, I understand you're beginning with some big football awards.
Yehias, world football's governing body, FIFA, announced three player shortlists on Monday for its men's and women's Player of the Year awards. Ladies first, Carly Lloyd of the United States, Aya Miyama of Japan, and Celia Sasich of Germany are the contenders for the Women's Award, which will be announced January 11th at a gala in Zurich, Switzerland. The Sunny Side of Sports doesn't get to vote on these FIFA awards. The voting process is open to the captains and head coaches of the men's and women's national teams of FIFA's 207 member associations. If I did get to vote, though, I think I'd go with Carly Lloyd for the Women's Award. Carly won the Golden Ball at this year's Women's World Cup in Canada as the best player, and she was the inspirational leader of a USA team that won a record third World Cup title. Meanwhile, Lionel Messi of Barcelona and Argentina and Cristiano Ronaldo of Real Madrid and Portugal will once again go head-to-head for the men's prize. Messi's Barcelona teammate, Neymar from Brazil, was also shortlisted for the 2015 FIFA Ballon d'Or Award. Superstar Messi won the award four times in a row between 2009 and 2012. Ronaldo, meanwhile, has won it three times, once when he was at Manchester United in 2008, and the most recent two trophies at Real Madrid. Now, Messi looks like the favorite to win the award again for a fifth time after a calendar year in which, after losing 2 months to injury, he has still scored 48 goals while leading Barcelona to three big trophies, the UEFA Champions League, Spain's La Liga, and the King's Cup. Joining us now with more football news is our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel are Orange Africa Confederations Cup champions following their 1-0 triumph over South African visitors Orlando Pirates in the return leg of the final in Sousse on Sunday. Centre-back and captain Amar Djemal slotted in the all-important goal in the first half to propel his side to a 2-1 triumph on aggregate. In Senegal, Nigeria edged Mali 3-2 as Egypt and Algeria drew 1-1 in Group B action at the Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations in Mboa, some 70 kilometres southeast of the capital, Dakar, on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Senegal downed South Africa 3-1 as Tunisia edged Zambia 2-1 in Group A matches in Dakar. In Ethiopia, Uganda pipped Burundi 1-0 as Tanzania mainland and Ethiopia drew 1-1 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Awasa, some 270 kilometers south of the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa on Saturday. Earlier on Friday, Rwanda dismissed Somalia 3-0 as giant killer Zanzibar stunned defending champions Kenya 3-1. Elsewhere, South Sudan beat guest side Malawi 2-0 as Sudan overpowered Djibouti 4-0 in Bahir Dar, some 320 kilometers north of Addis Ababa. Today, Monday, Uganda play Malawi, then Tanzania mainland engage Sudan in the quarterfinal matches in Addis Ababa. Turning to athletics, Bihanu Legese and Mosinet Geremeu secured a 1-2 Ethiopian triumph at the Airtel New Delhi Half Marathon in the Indian capital on Sunday. Legese clocked 59 minutes and 20 seconds. Geremeu was a second adrift, while Eritrean World Half Marathon record holder Zerzene Tadesa placed third in 59 minutes and 24 seconds. In the women's event, Cynthia Limo, Hela Kiprop, and Gladys Cherono clinched a 1-2-3 Kenyan medal podium sweep. 2 seconds separated the trio. Limo and Kiprop were credited with an identical time of 1 hour, 8 minutes and 35 seconds, 1 second ahead of Chesire. In basketball, Nigeria's Dolphins outwitted Cameroon's Ingies 56-46. Mozambique's Ferroviario de Maputo edged Uganda's Kampala City Council Authorities 67-62. And the Democratic Republic of Congo's INSS beat Kenya's United States International University 85-80 at the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championships in Luanda, Angola on Sunday. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Because this is Africa. Tamina, mina, waka, waka, Tamina, mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
I'm very excited. Nichabulile. Hola.
Because this is Africa. Tamina, mina, waka, waka, Tamina, mina, sakalewa. This time for Africa.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this, it's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Boxing has a new world heavyweight champion, the VOA's Nightline Africa sportsman, Segun Dot on the spot Adeyemi reports.
Good evening, Africa. British boxer Tyson Fury has become the new world heavyweight champion after upsetting Ukrainian Vladimir Klitschko in Dusseldorf, Germany. Tyson, who remains unbeaten, won the fight in front of over 50,000 boxing fans in a unanimous decision that ended Klitschko's 9-year reign. The judges called the fight 115-112, 115-112, and 116-111, all for the 27-year-old Tyson.
Congratulations to Vladimir and his team. They put up a really good fight tonight. I found him quite awkward to land clean on, as he did me. He caught me with some good shots, so credit to him. I'm a young, big, fast heavyweight, so congratulations to Vlad because he landed some great punches on me tonight. But tonight just wasn't his night, and it was my night. God gave me the victory tonight, so I hope to have many more defences of these titles in the future. And if I could just say one thing, if I could be half as good a champion as Vladimir Klitschko, I'd be very, very happy.
Tyson now becomes the World Boxing Association, International Boxing Federation, and World Boxing Organization heavyweight champion.
Just all the hard work has been rewarded with these belts, and to be call myself go down with the legends as calling myself the heavyweight champion of the world, you know, this has been the icing moment on the cake. Something I've been working towards my whole life, and like I said in the ring today, it was definitely the Jerry Maguire story for me and Mick Hennessy. Started from the bottom, now we're at the top together. Everybody wrote us off, said we had no chance. I kept faith, he kept faith, Peter kept faith. We all believed we could do it. We came here and we done it.
All through the fight, the 39-year-old Ukrainian, who was caught under the left eye in round 5, simply couldn't pull the trigger. Klitschko finally started fighting in round 12, but it was too little, too late.
Today was not a good night for me to win this fight. I wish there will be more clean shots that I could land. I couldn't find the right distance and land those shots. Tyson was quick with his hands and his body movement, and his head movement, I couldn't land the right punches. I congratulate him tonight. He won the fight, and to be continued.
Thanks so much for listening. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Segun Adeyemi in Lagos.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We heard from Vladimir Klitschko at the end of Segun's report, and with Klitschko's words, to be continued, it seems to leave open the possibility of a rematch against the new heavyweight champ, Tyson Fury. More basketball news now on the Sunny Side of Sports. Kobe Bryant, the Los Angeles Lakers superstar, says this, his 20th NBA season, will be his last. Kobe wrote at the Players Tribune, it's a website, he writes, "My heart can take the pounding, my mind can handle the grind, but my body knows it's time to say goodbye." Kobe has been plagued by injuries the past few years. The tributes are already pouring in for Kobe in his final NBA season. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver had this to say, "With 17 NBA All-Star selections, an NBA Most Valuable Player award, 5 NBA championships with the Lakers, 2 Olympic gold medals, and a relentless work ethic, Kobe Bryant is one of the greatest players in the history of our game." In more NBA news, the red-hot Golden State Warriors continue to make history. The Warriors go after their 19th consecutive victory to start the season later Monday night when they play the Utah Jazz. On the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Philadelphia 76ers. Tough to be a Philadelphia fan this NBA season. Philadelphia has lost all 18 of its games this season. Ouch! The Memphis Grizzlies beat the 76ers on Sunday night, 92-84. Their record-tying 18th straight loss to start the season. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to you, Hayes Woohee.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 UTC right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, preterm births, the world's number one killer of babies. And next, using iPads as part of a new initiative to improve learning in Malawi. But first, some music. Here is Salif Keita of Mali with Yambo. Yambo, yambo. Great Salif Keita of Mali with Yambo. Preterm births are the world's number one killer of babies. Each year, an estimated 1 million of the world's 15 million premature babies do not survive birth. VOA's Carol Pearson talked to Dr. Edward McCabe of the March of Dimes in the United States about new Stanford research that could help ensure more babies are born at full term.
The complications of preterm birth kill more babies and young children than anything else.
We've gotten some infectious diseases, diarrheal illnesses, malnutrition. Those have been going down, so we're making good gains there. But preterm birth, prematurity, has not been going down and in many countries has been increasing.
Worldwide, 15 million children are born prematurely each year. 1 million of them die, but others suffer lifelong disabilities, blindness, cerebral palsy, reduced intellectual ability, and more. 60% of preterm births occur in Africa and South Asia. And although the rate in the U.S. has dropped to 11.5%, it's still the highest rate of preterm birth in any industrialized country. The March of Dimes wants to cut the U.S. rate by more than half in the next 15 years. The organization has funded studies and set up research centers to find links to prematurity and ways to prevent it. Scientists at Stanford University found a difference in the bacteria in women's vaginas that may be critical in the understanding of prematurity.
In Stanford, they found that women who delivered preterm had a different community of microorganisms than women who delivered term.
Another study found a benefit to spacing babies by at least a year and a half.
A woman's body requires about 18 months to recover between pregnancies.
Less than 18 months increases the risk of prematurity. Other ways to reduce that risk include avoiding smoking and getting good prenatal care, nutrition, and exercise. Even so, doctors don't know what causes half of all preterm births, so the rest will depend on new discoveries through research.
It would truly be one giant leap for mankind if we could prevent millions of premature births and save hundreds of thousands of babies' lives.
The goal is healthier babies who require less medical care and who can grow up to become productive citizens. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
First grade students at 63 public schools in Malawi are now using iPads as part of a new initiative to improve learning. They are a gift from volunteer services overseas. The goal is to reach 3 million students in 5,300 government primary schools across the country. It is also aimed at addressing challenges like textbook shortages and overcrowding. But some educators are questioning if technology is the answer. Lamek Masina has the story from Lilongwe, Malawi.
First and second graders in Malawi are lagging far behind standards in counting and literacy, according to a recent study by the International Development NGO Volunteer Services Overseas. Some officials say large class sizes are to blame. VSO began distributing nearly 2,000 iPads to classrooms around the country in December 2014.
So we want to introduce technology to be a support for the ministry, for the teacher, to provide essentially one-to-one tuition for the child so that they can master the basic foundations of numeracy and literacy.
Students work in special learning centers. Teachers say the initiative is a relief.
Because in the normal class we have a lot of learners, so it's difficult for a teacher to go with each and every learner.
Students listen through headphones in the local language, Chichewa, and answer questions. The app was designed by the UK-based software company, 1Billion.
During normal classes, it becomes difficult to ask a teacher to repeat what she has said, while with iPad learning, we just press the repeat button.
Project implementers say students using the iPads are now testing as many as two grade levels ahead. But educators say the devices cannot replace the teachers.
And we have few teachers. For example, if a teacher is absent, and it's difficult to operate the learning center and the class with one teacher.
Education activists question the sustainability of the program.
So, coming in with the iPad, it may solve the congestion problem, but then have we solved the lack of teachers problem? And we hear that the program is being funded. How sustainable is this program to the Malawian government? Are we going to be able to continue to run it after the donors have gone?
VSO says efforts are underway to secure continued funding. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Xiaogan Chang, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Around the world, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Vietnam, Syria, Russia, Iran, and other countries, journalists are under siege and freedom of expression is under threat. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that in 2014, more than 60 journalists were killed, hundreds imprisoned, and dozens remain missing. Reporters Without Borders notes that governmental attempts to silence journalists include censorship, harassment, restrictive NGO laws, and public threats by political leaders. Speaking at Columbia University in New York, U.S. Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs Richard Stengel, himself a former journalist, described freedom of expression as a foundational human right. Challenges to that freedom, he said, are now deeper and more profound than at any time in decades. He described three: the physical dangers journalists confront in conflict zones and elsewhere, the shrinking space for free expression in countries with autocratic leadership, and the rise of disinformation. In the past, journalists trying to expose the truth were given a kind of safe pass, said Undersecretary Stengel. Now they are targets of regimes and of terrorists like ISIL. As such, supporting freedom of the press is a critical element of U.S. foreign policy. It is one of the issues that our diplomats around the world regularly address in bilateral talks with governments. One initiative provides trainings to journalists on physical and digital security and psychosocial care throughout the world. And the U.S. has invested over $100 million in internet freedom programs to provide tools and trainings to thousands of vulnerable civil society and independent journalists around the world. Finally, in response to the rise of disinformation from terrorist groups or autocratic regimes, the U.S. is being proactive, said Undersecretary Stengel, in claiming the space for truth-telling by pushing back on propaganda and falsehood with fact-based messages, as well as by supporting independent media around the world with financial, technical, and logistical support. And why? Because, as President Barack Obama has said, journalists give all of us as citizens the chance to know the truth about our countries, ourselves, our governments. That makes us better. It makes us stronger.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
next on Let's Talk. Punctuality. Does it matter to you? Does it affect your views about someone when you meet to do business? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing punctuality. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, after nearly 2 years of fighting the Ebola pandemic, Sierra Leone announced last month that the nation was Ebola-free. Guinean officials have declared that they will also soon be free of the virus. Join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Chaka Saleh and his guests discuss the battle to completely end Ebola in West Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America, VOA.